majority of both sides here. Unless there's objection of anybody.
No, I think Pat will probably be momentarily.
You chair it, go ahead.
I would move and ask unanimous consent that, seeing it is a Senate bill, Senator Petrulis bill, I would move and ask unanimous consent that he chair the committee.
No.
I think with high, Pat, I went in, but we'll get together. The amendments, so far as I can understand it, were pretty much those that were necessary, one or two of the Senate itself, but recommended to the bill. I don't know that floor amendment.
I might just pass this out because this was the memo that was given to members on the floor. And if you look at the second page, you'll see how CSSB 56 finance differs from the Senate bill. And at page 2, you'll see where the differences are, both the technical differences, the tax-free contributions language, which you knew about, the simplification of the administration of the program that was requested by DOA, the clarification of death benefits, again, which I think was uncontroversial, and then on page 3, the schedule for declining bonus payments, and that's explained. So that's
I think, was there a floor amendment? I had heard that floor amendment had some problems, potentials. And
Representative Taylor offered a floor amendment with regard to the death benefits, which was adopted, and it simply provides that the estate of the deceased would receive any residuals as opposed to the program itself.
I think it was redundant, so probably not a problem. Beth, you had some.
Through the chair, we've got varying opinions on where the money's going to find like a sheet to when we go through the all of the estate where the beneficiary takes, but it's probably not the world's greatest problem, and it's probably not a common problem. There's a renumbering of the bill that needs to occur, but I think that they can do that I think that the focus very much concerns section 9 as the schedule.
Good. Well, then why don't we take up section 9? As you know, the Senate version had a guarantee of $250, expecting, though, that in the same period of time that the schedule proposed by the House would make the same contributions, but it was a hope and an aspiration rather than a actual legislative decline of state support. And I understand that there is somebody here to explain what, Beth, these factors here.
Retirement benefits, Mr. Stonemaker, who's the acting head of retirement benefits, is here today to talk about how to come up with the monthly annuity payment for the seniors when we see. And those sheets that you have handed out to you are the way that he would use to come up with that payment. Mm-hmm. We ran numbers last night, but had a slightly different approach so that the numbers this morning aren't going to be valid. But they're fairly close. Last night's numbers were fairly close to the House's schedule of payments. Now, I'd like to say just two things as a matter of background. The session law as it's written, and as Representative Homer has pointed out before and as research has shown, says that there is no absolute requirement of $250 a month being paid to seniors per month, because of the fact that the legislature is going to have to be appropriating money every year to get those payments out. Just as background, that's what the legislature does right now. That's what the legislature is going to have to continue to do. But just as background, that's
every less of year. That's right.
Now, the way that the Senate version was written was that the schedule remained flexible so that hopefully the end amount would be $250 a month, but it did put some uncertainty as to just what the state's obligation is going to be every year. There were some figures run by House Research in terms of looking at the program. If permanent fund dividends dropped, if interest rates didn't rise, and it kind of shows the variance that could occur. The House's schedule of payments utilized endpoints correctly represented a 9% interest rate in permanent fund dividends growing at a certain interest rate every year and plugged in that schedule. And that's where the concern comes from. We've got Mr. Spellmaker here to explain his approach on this formula to come up with the annuity amount, and I think it might be helpful just to hear from him just how that would be done.
Go for it.
Mr. Chairman, I'd also like Mr. Stonecker, when he comes to testify, since evidently some numbers were run last night, to know a time frame of how long it would take him to come up with some numbers that he's comfortable with, because I think he would like to get this bill out. Obviously, we aren't wedded to the exact numbers. I think that the differences are going to be a dollar up or a dollar down.
I think the first run, I understand, is extremely close. Yeah. Probably the only debate, if we're going to use a declining schedule, would be an argument about what interest rate to use.
Yeah.
That would be the logical area. But Mr. Stolnick, if you have something to add, and I know you've done some work here, and we should. Can you tell us what this schedule does here that's already built in? Is that what we have before us here?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Bob Stolnaker, Acting Director for the Division of Retirement Benefits. As far as the schedule identified in the committee substitutes for SB 56, I believe that schedule was determined by virtue of some assumptions, not only at a 9% interest rate, which is what we currently use for the other retirement systems, but also dealing with the Department of Labor with some mortality table that they had established. Whether or not that's an accurate mortality table, I think is anyone's guess. Certainly it's not a mortality table that is used currently in the other systems that we administer, and there is some small difference there. What we have been dealing with primarily is just trying to establish the process in which we would run an annuity system.
Okay. If you tell us how you would run the annuity system with that particular schedule.
Okay. What we would do, now, this schedule is a standalone schedule. This is a schedule that's determined now based on those assumptions. It's not uncommon with the retirement systems to alter the assumptions over time.
Sure.
If we find, in fact, that the rate of return is better than we had anticipated, then we have just recently increased the assumption to 9% from 8% in the retirement systems, as a matter of fact, because the return has been so good. Prior to 1986, we had an 8% assumption for return. The same with mortality tables. If we find that people are living longer, then you have to adjust the mortality table to reflect the fact that if you have a given amount of money, which is a defined contribution plan, which is what this would be, and you want to spread that money over the person's expected lifetime, if that expected lifetime increases by a year and a half, then you need to spread the money further. Therefore, the monthly payments would decrease because you've got a longer life expectancy assumption. And that's what, in effect, a mortality table is. So those are unknowns because they can be adjusted over time to reflect what in reality is being experienced. That's what we have to deal with. That's what we deal with each of our systems. This would parallel more closely the supplemental benefit system, which is a defined contribution plan. It is not uncommon that we do use different mortality tables because each year we go out and we go out to bid on the best tables that a provider would offer for that period of time. This would then mean that there would be some small fluctuation over time for the people that would be retiring, if you will, or taking advantage of an annuity in that year. I would propose a similar approach be taken with this as far as getting, of course, I think what we're proposing is in this is that we would be administering that and we would be looking at the assumptions over time.
Good floor.
Again, the question is, how quickly can you get in it? A revised schedule to the committee if we want to move this bill out like tomorrow or the next week.
Well, what we could do, I would say, if you're looking at kind of a schedule like is proposed here, what we can do is check with our consultant and ask them to provide us a table based on the actuarial mortality factors perhaps that the current carrier is using for the supplemental benefits. If we use that mortality table with a 9% interest assumption, I would hope we could have something to you tomorrow.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I think one of the concerns, at least one of my concerns, and I don't know about some of the other people at the committee, is that there is a clause in there or something that states that the annuity will not, or that the payment will not be any more than $250. I guess my concern is that if there's a way that we can come up with, and I realize that this is not set in concrete. In other words, you can't predict how much is going to be in permanent fund earnings and what dividends are going to be and what they're going to go to. I mean, those things fluctuate and change. And especially if there was a 40-30-30 plan, that would obviously change the assumptions and everything. My only concern is that if someone has gone through and put in the money religiously, that they aren't going to be denied something less in 1995 or 1996 that's less than $250. And I understand we could change these in future years, don't get me wrong, but it would seem that we want to have some built-in security there so that there still would be so that those people would receive the $250 at least, also considering the fact that inflation has gone up and all sorts of other things.
To answer to one question, I would request that you do provide us as early as possible that table. We did had some actuarial effort also, but the table you suggested with using your mortality table, our figures came up very close to the houses. They said for some of the wrong reasons. I don't know what that means, but they did. But anyway, if you could do exactly what you stated, maybe for 9% and what, maybe 8% too? I think there ought to be an
eight
factor
10.
In here.
Go
8, 9?
8, 9, 10, go a percentage.
What do you think? One for 8, one for 9, one for 10, they suggest.
Mr. Chair, Beth? If I might, through the chair.
Yeah.
We had figures given to us yesterday by Mr. Kelly of the Permanent Fund Dividend on the Permanent Fund Board's projections of the Permanent Fund Dividend.
Yes.
And I just wondered if those were the correct ones that we should use. And that's what we, Madam Chair, fine, thanks. I just wanted to clarify. We got them updated yesterday, so
okay.
We could use those. And Ms. Kamara provided Mr. Stallmaker.
Are you referring to an updated schedule?
Yes. Pardon me. It's right here.
Okay.
It's as of yesterday.
Okay.
And I'll Xerox that for
these numbers.
Right. Those are these numbers.
What are those numbers?
We use those. We'll hand those out.
I think
they're fairly close.
Pardon my guess me. Is we'll need to take a look at it. It may have a tremendous impact on the cost of the program, depending upon whether they're up or down. If they're down, they probably have much more expensive.
I believe down slightly. Is that
okay.
Yes, down slightly.
I'll hand it back just so that. Oh, okay. Dick. Beth, you want this particular copy?
No, thank you.
Yeah, good. Dick, then.
These are good. These are good.
Those are as of yesterday from Jim Kelly.
Well, this is what we expect
the permanent fund to be. This is what the permanent fund board expects their dividends to be. Corporation, pardon me.
The dividends from the money that's been deposited will yield per person?
No, this is the permanent fund dividend payments.
Okay, very good.
Per year.
Okay, I see.
That's
so that would show the increased amount. Of course, that'd still take a crystal ball to come up with those figures.
Exactly.
Because who knows what the interest rates are going to be if you go abroad.
They're using probably different assumptions on interest than we are.
Joe Kane, who pays a lot of attention to these things, and you know, you can ask the janitor on the street, but he says right now, and I have checked it out with another investor, at least 9.25 or better on federal investments now, what? 30 year. I would think that they would look carefully at that permanent fund rather than some of the other more risky investments.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, and then please. Please,
sorry.
You and then.
Mr. Chairman, I don't care what the schedule of the amounts are, as long as that there's some guarantee in there that we lowball it from the standpoint of what we expect the interest rate to be so that there is some security questions that are taken into consideration for the people who are receiving that money in the future, the $250, so that you know, if we're going to have a schedule, I just want to be extremely conservative about it. And I don't know how some other people feel about it.
Give floor.
Sure. Well, the numbers we get should be actuarially accurate. I mean, we could make the decision for them. But I wouldn't want to ask the administration to lowball their calculations.
Certainly an assumed interest rate could be defined in statute.
I think the more conservative mortality and the more conservative interest rate.
Yeah.
And we can run that at your mortality table, and 8% would probably be the conservative one to start with. Please proceed.
The other reason I wanted to say something, though, is that knowing the hour, I would appreciate it if maybe the committee would look at the other areas for a moment. I've looked through it, and I think they are all technical amendments that don't need special powers. But to amend Section 9, we will have to write a letter to the President and Speaker asking for free conference powers to amend the wording in Section 9. And I would move it. We have a letter drafted asking for that in Section 9.
Or this morning for both sides.
Right. And if there's anything else, which I don't expect there to be, but if anyone has anything else, that should be in the letter.
The question around the table, does anybody feel any other sections of the bill should be amended with the knowledge? So that
Mr. Chairman, just one question about the date. We discussed this with staff, and it was a little unclear as to whether or not it was something that ought to be changed here or something that the director could do, the provisor of statutes could do, so perhaps we want to clarify.
Thanks, Madam Chair. There's one small section in the session laws right now that refers to the payments occurring after 1988. And
yes.
I think that just being absolutely clear on that, which would require a new section to the bill, putting in the date 1989, is probably not a bad idea. Ms. Cook feels that it could probably be technical, but she's also...
Can we do it without requesting? I think we can do an effective date.
No, this is... Pardon me. Sorry. It's not the effective date. It's something within the session law.
Okay. Well, then we better ask for it.
But you can't ask for a power... and specifically itemize what you intend to do. You could ask for the power to change in that section 88 to 89.
Beth, would you draft...
rather than having a free tower.
Would you draft the request, the style Tam Cook will know?
We will do that. I think that's wise.
The question is, if there's no objection, is that we ask for powers of free conference on section 9 and this particular section in which this date, the decision to be made in both cases later, but we at least ask to have that opportunity.
I can add would be to try to enumerate specifically what it is, which is to change the date.
Senator, do you have any feelings at this time? Do you have more to offer now, Mr. Stolnik?
At this point, no, Mr. Chairman. I'll certainly get to work on this using, and I'll use the assumptions of the accumulation as far as what they're proposing by the permanent fund. I would think that what we'd want to use is the more advantageous percentage. In other words, more than likely we'll go with a 10% assumption and the 9, if you want to make sure that since this formula is an offset type of formula, not to exceed 250, let's say, but at a minimum this amount, a higher interest rate would assume they're going to get a greater annuity. So if we set this at a little lower amount, that would be, I think, more. But anyways, I can work out those numbers and then we can.
Mr. Chairman,
yeah, for
will we be? We're going to get an 8, a 9, and 10%. Is that what
we think? The 10 is unnecessary.
Right. I think maybe it's.
I think the 10 would be preferable because what we're saying is that way we're assuming that the permanent fund. Well, let me work.
Fitting in my conservative position is that I just want to be sure, knowing the Dreyfus Fund 30 years back and so on. I want to be sure that we don't overstate the interest return.
Exactly.
I think that's bothering
him. That's my concern.
I don't know about here. In 10%, I feel would really overstate
it.
So from my perspective, I'd sure prefer a definitive work on 9 and 8.
And, Mr. Chairman, also 7. I think I'd like to see what 7 looks like.
If you can run it without killing yourself for tomorrow. Because I think tomorrow probably is key to this decision.
Mr. Chairman, yes. In addition to seeing these alternative runs, I guess I would like to hear some little additional discussion on the question of mortality tables. I assume that your mortality table is based on the average life expectancy of an adult living in the United States of America, as opposed to the Department of Labor mortality tables, which is based on the average life expectancy of an Alaskan. And I think, you know, between now and the next time we meet, in addition to perhaps Mr. Stolnaker, perhaps hearing from Senate Research and House Research on just why we would want to base it on the average life expectancy of an Alaskan versus the national average, because I think we may see a difference in result.
I frankly am happy to settle with either mortality table as long as it has something that's supported by industry.
Yeah. Well, certainly it could be defined once again in statute as to what mortality table you'd want to use. The reason we use national tables is because a goodly portion of the people who are receiving benefits live other than in Alaska?
Not on this program.
Well, on this program, once they're receiving an annuity, they can live anywhere in the United States.
Correct.
Matter of fact, once they've started on the
trip. Yeah, but this would be the bonus component.
Right, the bonus component wouldn't affect. But anyway, I mean, that's certainly.
Are you satisfied the materials will be available for potential decision making tomorrow from the requests you have? Yes, sir.
I would like people to think about it a little bit on the very low actuarial assumptions, low end. But one of the things we want to do is have some assurance that these funds are invested prudently at maximum return, because it's for the benefit of the person who's setting aside. So there is a risk going too low in that you might be opening the door for what could be called sloppy investing.
Okay.
And so, I mean, there's a trade-off there. I'd at least encourage members to think about that, at least before they get too carried away and going into a low number.
I have one question. Does anybody here now, the present House table, does anybody feel that that isn't in the ballpark, that it won't work?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't have a problem with the table as long as there's a lot of as long as we have flexibility. And I think my concern has been by putting a table out there that these are set in concrete, that these figures all the way to 2004 is going to be the state's participation. And I don't know if we can predict what inflation is going to be in 2004 or 2005. And I guess that's why I like the idea that we have, which was on the formula. Now, if we can come up, Mr. Chairman, with a formula that is that's fairly flexible, with, and you know, guarantees the security out there after these people put in money for years and years and years, fine.
What is your opinion of the present House formula? Is it a workable formula? Is it within the ballpark? I'm just curious.
The only comment I'd have about the current formula is it's based on assumptions right now, and it's the amounts, which once again are kind of not to exceed amounts, are cast in statute. I think the difference between that and having a specified formula, if you will, is that if you do change an assumption, then you just change the assumption on the formula, as opposed to going through and reinstituting a new table every time you change an assumption. So it's kind of an academic question. Do you want to redo the table every time, or do you want to have a formula established so that electronically it doesn't really matter? We just put it into the computer that, well, on our end of it, they're going to get the amount that their annuity would be, whether that's over 250 or not. And it just means on the other side, or the permanent fund, or the longevity bonus side, it will be a not to exceed amount, which we'll be supplying them each year by virtue of that formula.
Pat, do you have any comments?
Well, we're viewing this from different sides. I think that are one of the purposes of this section was to provide fiscal certainty. We were not particularly interested in an annually changing system, whether it be in the formula or in a statutory, in annual statutory changes, that there was a benefit in having the certainty in the statute relative to the bonus component.
But you were trying to be fair in designing it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But this does represent our best guess of reality.
I have two quick things. One, we may need to make another date change in 1989 versus 1988.
Request that question.
They're just very specific. They're really technical.
We have to have those to the floor of the Senate and House today. And we also would like to, the minute we can get this information, see if we can't design it into an amendment form, Bill, too, for consideration of this committee tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Thank you.